Our text is the assigned second reading for today from the Acts of the Apostles, chapters 11 and 12. Now in these days, prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch. One of them named Agabus stood up and foretold by the Spirit that there would be a great famine over all the world. And this took place in the days of Claudius. So the disciples determined, everyone according to his ability, to send relief to the brothers living in Judea. And they did so, sending it to the elders by the hand of Barnabas and Saul. About that time, Herod the king laid violent hands on some who belonged to the church. He killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. This was during the days of unleavened bread. This is our text. What are you doing here? It's the question that you ask your old college roommate from Kansas when you run into him out of the blue one night at Ted Drew's. What are you doing here? It's the question you ask when you answer the mysterious knock on your dorm door and discover your unannounced and usually unspontaneous parents waiting with smiles and an enormous care package. What are you doing here? It's the question your wife asks you when you walk through the front door 2 hours ahead of schedule and find yourself immersed in a full blast, rigorous scrapbooking party. What are you doing here? It's the question your old grade school teacher asks you when you interrupt her tour of the SEM on your way to class. What are you doing here? It's the question that gets asked when things don't add up. What are you doing here? It's the question that is asked when someone is where you don't expect him to be. What are you doing here? It expresses surprise and perplexity. Something's out of sync. Something is out of whack and not routine. Someone's not where he's supposed to be. So, what are you doing here? Was exactly the right question for Yahweh to ask his worn out, discouraged, hopeless prophet Elijah when the bedraggled seer showed up on Mount Horeb. Elijah was supposed to have been in Israel, taking on that scoundrel Ahab and his delightful bride Jezebel. Elijah was supposed to have been God's mouthpiece, proclaiming the word of Yahweh to the Lord's people in Israel. Elijah was to have been working as a prophet in the midst of the people. And so when Elijah came dragging up to the mountain in the middle of the wilderness of Sinai, the obvious question was, what are you doing here? Elijah was not where he was supposed to be, and his geographic location or mislocation was but a symptom of the much greater significant dislocation in his life. Elijah was out of sync. He was out of sync with his vocation. He was forsaking his calling. He was not doing what the Lord had given him to do. Elijah's twice repeated, perhaps carefully rehearsed answer tells it all. Elijah was fed up. He was tired of doing what the Lord had given him to do. He wanted something else. He wanted out. What God had in mind was not what Elijah had in mind. What are you doing here, Elijah? Well, Lord, I guess, to be honest, I'm just looking for a little sympathy and a little bit of understanding. How about an attaboy, Elijah? How about a little appreciation? I've given it my all. I'm worn out. I think I'm done. The brothers James and John had a similar agenda when they made their infamous request of Jesus. They were not ready to quit, but they did want to make sure that they were getting their fair share of recognition, appreciation, and reward. They were eager to make sure that their sacrifices and their hard efforts were not going unnoticed. Jesus' question, "What do you want me to do for you?" was the equivalent of, "What are you doing here?" It was an invitation for the sons of Zebedee, those sons of thunder, to tell their story. They did. Ignoring any implied invitation to reevaluate their request before they made it, they plunged forward and told Jesus what they wanted. They wanted glory. Like Elijah, they were looking for what was fair. They wanted approval and affirmation. They wanted the recognition that they deserved for a job well done. What are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing here, John? What are you doing here, James? They all knew the answer. They didn't have to think about it. They all knew what they expected. They all knew what they wanted. At least, they thought they did. And so what about you? What are you doing here? It might be worthwhile to ask the question regarding the immediate context. What are you doing here in chapel this morning? But even more pointed and perhaps significant is the wider context. What are you doing here at Concordia Seminary? There are probably a host of different answers sitting here this morning. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to make God happy. I'm trying to make my parents or my wife or my kids proud of me. I'm trying to do what my pastor thinks I'm supposed to do. I'm trying to get away from some bad history. I'm trying to make a new beginning. I'm trying to get rid of this gnawing, carping, afflicting feeling in my gut that just won't go away. I'm trying to make a living. I'm trying to make a difference in God's church. I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to help myself. Or perhaps, I have no idea. I just kind of wandered into this whole thing and, well, now here I am. Lots of reasons. But not so different from Elijah or from James. You just want what's fair. You want a little appreciation, a little payback for your hard work, a passing grade in the qualifier in August. That would be nice. A decent raise, a growing parish, peer approval, respect of the academy, love of the laity, the appreciation of people that matter. That's all. Not asking for much. That's what you're doing here. But God is not here to fulfill your dreams, to grant your requests, and to fill your order. God is not here to make sure that you feel appreciated, approved, and actualized. God is not in the business of meeting your agenda. He's the creator. He's God. He sets the agenda. He determines the goals. He establishes the raison d'etre. He decides what you're to be and what you're to be doing when you're there. He's God. And so Elijah did not get the sympathetic ear and the attaboy prophet that he so craved. He got God. He got God's agenda. And he went back to where God wanted him to be. Elijah ended up where he most needed to be, immersed in God's plan. And James finally ended up where he needed to be. The craving for appreciation and approval and accolades was driven out. The glory-seeking days were done. Isn't it fascinating that the last we hear about James, James of the inner circle, James the brother of John, the one worthy of Christ's right hand, the last we hear of approval-loving James is simply that Herod killed him with the sword. Apparently, less than a sentence is sufficient for the legacy of James the Greater. Indeed, James' stature had so diminished that at the end, his death serves as little more than background information for the story of Peter's remarkable jailbreak. That's what comes next in Acts. James the Important fades into the insignificant framework of Peter's story. James does not get the glory he had so eagerly sought. Peter gets an angel escort out of prison. He gets a cherished story of the early church. He gets a full chapter in the book of Acts and more. James gets a brief verse and gets killed. No glory. He just dies. Just like Jesus had said he would. And James, I suspect, was just fine with that. The glory days, mercifully, were over. At the end, James was living God's way. He was living Jesus' way, the way of the cross. James was living in God's plan. Had someone put the question to him while he was there on Herod's death row, James, what are you doing here? He would have told him straight off, I'm just doing what the Lord has given me to do. That's the answer. It's always the answer. It's the answer of every one of God's servants. I'm just doing what the Lord has given me to do. That's all. Nothing else matters. Accolades, approval, and appreciation are insignificant. Only one thing matters: doing what the Lord has given you to do. Joined with your Lord in the water of baptism, you walk with your Lord, even through the baptism of suffering and death, and yes, the seminary. Wherever he takes you, it's okay. It's not about glory. It's about the cross. It's about doing what the Lord has given you to do. St. James is the saint for the ordinary guy. He's the saint for those who have learned to die to glory and to live in the cross. He's not in the limelight. He's not soaking up the attaboys. He's not working for peer approval or even for divine affirmation. Faded into the framework, a small, quiet, insignificant piece of the story, a silent soldier, James is the ordinary saint. He's not bewildered about his purpose. He's not perplexed about his significance. He's just walking with his Lord in the way of the cross. James is the ordinary saint. James is your saint. Learn what Elijah learned. Learn what James learned. No matter where you are, no matter who's asking, there's always one right answer. What are you doing here? That's easy. I'm just doing what the Lord has given me to do. Amen.